You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
For those of you who haven't yet seen the delightful, delightful Elmo clip, we've played a little bit of it at the top of a couple of our hours the last couple of days where he says, don't make this a thing. That's Elmo. Dan, describe the rest of his comments because it has everything to do with the United States of America.
Yeah.
And soccer, but it's the way he says it. I don't even know if we still have the full clip.
Just to be clear, Elmo wants Team USA to win, okay? But Elmo loves everybody. Just to be clear. Don't make this a thing.
It's rather aggressive from Elmo. Don't make this a thing.
I want the USA to win, but Elmo loves everybody. Don't make this a thing.
Don't make this a thing.
That needs to be our new catchphrase. Like, I don't know, when your microphone's open and you're talking about a story and you don't know it's broadcasting to however many bajillions of people are listening, you should actually just be like, don't make this a thing.
Yeah, don't make this a thing.
We're getting ready for the big Tunisia-Netherlands game this week in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Dan, how do you pronounce it? Iran?
It's Tunisia.
Orania.
Anyway, we did 10 fun facts about Netherlands earlier today. Do you want 10 fun facts about Tunisia?
Yes, I would. Tunisia, 6 p.m. Thursday night, by the way, that match here in Kansas City.
First, do you know where Tunisia is?
No. Is that one of the fun facts, Sam?
It's not. Dan, go ahead.
North Africa.
Got it.
It juts out. It's the pointy thing that juts out into the Mediterranean.
Okay, I know exactly where that is. Mm-hmm. Tunisia. Okay, Sam, fun fact number one.
These facts compiled by Gemini. Thank you, AI, for ruining our environment and providing great information. Fun fact number one, it simply states, welcome to planet Tatooine. If you're a Star Wars fan, parts of Tunisia will look incredibly familiar because George Lucas used several locations across the Tunisian desert to film the desert planet of Tatooine.
Got it.
The home of the ancient Carthage.
Okay.
Colosseum to rival Rome. Their 3rd century AD Colosseum could hold up to 35,000 spectators, actually larger than many amphitheaters in Italy itself.
Wow.
You might recognize it from the appearance in the movie Gladiator. Whoa, I didn't know that.
No way.
Africa's northernmost point, Cape Angela, is in Tunisia. The town of Blue and White, perched above the Mediterranean Sea. Sidi Bou Said is a stunning cliffside town where a strict local law mandates that every single building must be painted crisp white and a striking indigo.
Oh, wow.
Liquid gold. Tunisia is the world's largest producer of olive oil. Did not know that.
No.
The city of 700 mosques, the historic city of... I'm not even going to try.
Common spelling?
Was founded in 670 AD and again has 700 mosques. The 4th century synagogue, I can't say any of these words. It's got a really old synagogue in it.
When I thought fun fact, I thought you were going to say, like, fun fact about Tunisia, they are the world's happiest people, and their average life expectancy is 102.
They have a lot of mosaics, and they have a lot of Saharan desert.
Okay.
Those are the fun facts.
That is
it's
good.
It's a beautiful country.
And Netherlands, we learned, all wear orange.
Super tall people.
Very tall because, like, a bajillion years ago, they had a leader whose last name was the Orange. Like, William the Orange was what he was known as, and there was some war, and he was a super awesome guy, and that's why they wore orange.
They rebelled against the Spanish.
Right, all of those things.
How did you combine, like, 8 of those two Netherlands facts into one?
My fun facts
it's because he has Dave.
Way better than your fun facts. That's hilarious.
He's got that ADHD.
I just came across the most bizarre headline in the Kansas City Star. Every once in a while they'll throw out a question and I think to myself, no one has ever wanted to know that ever, but I'm going to throw it out because the answer is so funny. Okay. This is the question. Ready? Is it legal to sleep at a rest stop? Here's what the law says. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't care what the law says. I don't want to be murdered. So no one has ever asked that question, but here's the answer.
If I'm tired, I'm sleeping.
Lock the door.
While it's not necessarily a crime to drive while sleepy, it can also be extremely dangerous. Driving while tired, they say, is no different from drunk driving, according to the National Sleep Foundation. If you are planning on a road trip ahead of like the fourth holiday, they recommend plotting out your rest stops or points of interest along your route. Drowsy driving, this is not funny, accounts for an estimated 1 in 5 fatal motor vehicle crashes on U.S. roads.
Considered,
yet rarely makes the news like drunk driving does.
I was going to say, considered almost more dangerous than drunk driving.
So believe it or not, it is not legal everywhere to pull over for a nap. Many states have different rules when it comes to sleeping at rest stops. In fact, in Virginia, they completely prohibit you from sleeping at a rest stop. In Illinois, they have a time limit for how long you can sleep in your car.
Mm-hmm.
In Kansas, if you're curious, you are allowed to sleep at rest areas maintained by the Kansas Department of Transportation. In Missouri, you are allowed to sleep at rest areas maintained by the Missouri Department of Transportation.
I've slept in many rest areas as I've driven and traveled around these great United States.
You just like recline the old driver's seat back and out you go?
And take a nap. Yeah. Or if it's really late and yeah, I've pulled over and pulled into a rest area and just slept
yeah,
for
Yeah, that's how you get murdered,
hours.
Dan, or kidnapped.
No, it's not.
I'll tell you this.
Lock the door.
I'll tell you this. Doesn't matter. Serial killers have hatchets, number one, and Sam, number two. If I had to pull over and sleep, and I mean dead serious, where
kit.
Would you do it? Because I'm telling you, it ain't a rest stop. No way in hell. I would be comfortable doing it. You know where?
Walmart.
In front of a... Oh, hell no. In the at night?
Yeah.
No!
A lot of people camp in Walmart parking lot.
Quick trip. I would feel comfortable in the front. Right in the front. That Quick
Taking
Trips,
up somebody's space.
No, but they're the most surveilled place ever, and you guys have the best surveillance cameras. Like, it is crystal clear.
I was going to say,
it's not going to stop a criminal.
In reality, I think your best bet probably is a rest stop right by the building because, again, it has security. I've heard of people that will like pull off onto a random exit and kind of drive down that side road for a while and just pull off and sleep.
No,
that is how you get murdered. You are much safer sleeping at a rest stop. It's not safe. It comes with its own risks, but so does driving. So, I mean,
okay. Let's not say a rest stop or a Quick Trip, a truck stop. I would actually feel more safe outside of like a Flying J.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's truckers coming, there's truckers going. You're going to have
a lot of activity.
Good, like, eyes on you so that if someone does try to kill you, there are witnesses.
Despite the stereotype that people go missing from truck stops all the time, it's just not true. It's not
actually.
I went over to the pilot and all of a sudden I was gone.
They are actually our number one defense, you guys, in one of the number one defenses in trafficking. Because truckers are there, and there's all these signs everywhere now that says if you see something, say something. There's a network of them, and I think that's a good thing. Anyway, I thought that was one of the more bizarre stories I've ever seen. And then this, you guys, from the federal government, we need to, because they're all stupid, we need to clarify something that we brought you in this very hour yesterday. Remember the crazed homicidal maniac that started shooting people on I-70 and 670 and then— There was a standoff, and then there was another standoff, and then there was a fire, and they can't find the guy. $25,000 reward from the FBI for information leading to that idiot. Anyway, yesterday on the show, it was announced by one Dana Wright, because I read a lot, that the federal government had said they thought they had him and he was dead.
Or he could be dead or something.
Oh, I'm going to literally read what was said, and then I'm going to give you Kansas City's response from the police department, which has been sanitized, because I guarantee you that's not what they originally said when they heard about this. The attorney general literally said that we're still checking on whether or not he's alive. And then the host of the program said, but it sounds like maybe you think he's dead. And he replied, yes. This is the headline and the response from Kansas City. U.S. Attorney General's claim about Kansas City highway shooter blindsided police. Blindsided police. We do not have any information regarding that whatsoever, quoting here from the police spokesperson in the case. The comments appear to represent an extraordinary disconnect between the nation's top law enforcement official and the police agencies investigating the string of high-profile shootings ahead of the World Cup. federal agencies have provided no insight into how they received the information, why the comments were made on a national news program. And when you asked today, they all went, you need to talk to Kansas City, Missouri about that. We're not, any future updates need to come from KCPD. So if you heard on this program yesterday that it was being reported that he was dead, holed up in a house, they were still trying to figure out whether he was alive or dead. All of that is a gigantic pile of malarkey.
Yeah.
Kansas City says, we have no idea, none, where that information came from. There is still a $25,000 reward. Homicidal Nutloon is still on the loose.
That suspect believed to be Oscar Sanchez Munoz. You can find pictures of him all over any local media webpage. Of course, he was tied to 5 different shootings along I-70, 670, starting in KCK, going to Independence, injuring 4, killing 1, 2 standoffs where he either wasn't there or escaped, burned down a family member's house. There's now a GoFundMe for that family member who said, I didn't welcome him into my home. This guy, not a good guy, allegedly.
Wouldn't you call someone, you're in Washington, D.C., or whatever it is the heck they do there, I don't even know. Wouldn't you pick up the phone and say, I'm about to go on national television and say that this fugitive is dead? Do we have him? Like, there is just a gigantic, no one knows where they got that information, and it sure as hell was not from Kansas City. Anyway. Wait. Back with
could
more
it have
for this.
Been a situation where they were like, I don't know, he might be dead, and they took that too far and ran with it? I don't know.
Sam, I don't know.
That's dumb.
I know you don't go on national news saying that a fugitive is, you know, with the FBI involved in the reward. And yeah, anyway, yeah. Still on the loose. 913-586-7798. When we get back, I want to talk a little bit about the guy that went to prison, got his hair cut, and then sued. What? It's a lawsuit. It's a real thing. 913-586-7798. We're back with much more after this. We got a whopper of a local case update here for you in just a minute. But first, I want to touch just for a second on this Rastafarian lawsuit. By the way, I was not fully aware that Rastafarianism is a protected religion.
Yes.
When I've been told, I haven't used the word, but when someone has said, you know, he's the Rastafarian.
Right.
It's usually someone with dreadlocks.
I mean, the two kind of run semi-consistent.
Right. But you can have dreadlocks and not be Rastafarian. But do all Rastafarians have dreadlocks?
I am looking now.
Rastafarianism is a religion and social movement.
Started back in Jamaica in the 1930s.
Yep, Jamaica in the 30s, combining elements of Christianity, Pan-Africanism, focusing heavily on African pride, living a naturally, spiritually balanced life.
Dreadlocks are considered a key cultural religious practice under Rastafarianism.
There we go. The growing of uncut, uncombed hair, just dreadlocks, is a sacred vow and a way to distinguish adherence from the corrupt world of Babylon. Okay, so it is part of the religion. This is from the New York Times, and you've heard it in Dan's newscast, because this lawsuit seems crazy to me, but here we are.
It also says that for Rastas, smoking cannabis is
yes.
not a recreational activity. It's the only herb used during communal reasoning sessions.
Okay. The Supreme Court ruled today that a Rastafarian whose dreadlocks were forcibly shaved by prison guards could not sue state employees for money. It was a 6-3 decision dividing the court, by the way. The majority said federal law did not allow the prisoner, Damon Landor, to sue individual guards in their private capacity for violating his religious beliefs. This is where we need to go back because I don't understand this. Mr. Lander said of the decision, I am disappointed but not defeated. What happened to me violated my faith and my dignity and should not happen to anyone else. And I am in his corner on this. I said to Sam during a break, they can forcibly shave your head when you go into prison, when did we, because to me,
right,
male, female, black, white, take religion out of it. Although I think in some religions, you can't take hair out of the religion.
Well, for Rastafarians,
if you're a Rastafarian,
you can't.
Or if you're Sikh, Sam, how is it legal to forcibly shave off someone's hair? Yes, you give up certain rights when you are incarcerated. I sure as heck did not know that was one of them.
The short answer is yes. In many cases, they can, in terms of forcing you to shave your head before going to prison. But the rules depend heavily on whether you are in a federal prison or a state prison and whether you have a recognized religious exemption. Federal prisons versus state prisons. The Federal Bureau of Prisons has very lenient rules regarding hair. Under federal policy, wardens cannot restrict hair length. However, in the state prison systems, it is a completely different story. Many states, such as Texas, California, New York, allow long hair, but several other states retain strict grooming codes, mandating short haircuts and shaven faces upon entry.
And by the way, I know you're all wondering, did he kill five people? He did not. He was serving a 5-month sentence for drug possession in Louisiana. Okay. When he reported for his 5-month sentence for drug possession, he had not cut his hair for 20 years.
Wow.
In keeping with his faith, his dreadlocks fell nearly to his knees. This is not something where someone thought, this is a trend, I want to have dreadlocks. And 2 years later, they're still kind of okay with it, so we're going to go down this path. This is an inmate for 20 years grew out his hair as part of his protected religious beliefs.
So in states with strict haircut rules, every incoming inmate is given a standard uniform haircut, often a shave close to the scalp or otherwise considered a buzz cut. During the initial booking and diagnostic phase, the states that do follow this policy cite issues like security, saying it's easier to hide contraband or razor blades and longer hair.
Now, listen to this, Sam. This is so egregious. 4 months into his 5-month term in 2020, he was transferred to a new prison. So for the first 4 months, he kept the dreadlocks that he had had for 20 years.
Yeah.
In the last month, he was transferred to a new prison. He carried with him a copy of a 2017 legal opinion that held that inmates must be allowed to keep their dreadlocks under a federal law protecting prisoners' religious freedom. He brought with him that legal decision. When he pulled out a copy, a guard threw it in the trash. The two guards then handcuffed him to a chair and forcibly shaved him bald. He sued the warden and the guards under the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act. How?
Says here that this leaves a massive gray area where even if a state's policy technically protects the inmate's hair, again, protected by religion.
But you can't get any damages if they violate it?
Guards on the ground will still likely forcibly shave the head of the inmate without fear of being sued personally for damages.
This is despicable.
The other reasons, by the way, they cite for requiring short hair is identification.
Okay, but this was spite, Sam.
I mean,
let's be clear. This was spite. When he said, this is protected, I've brought with me a copy of this, I've been growing my hair 20 years, the guard threw it in the trash, handcuffed him, and he and the warden forcibly shaved his head. You are not doing that because we want to make sure there's not contraband in your hair. They don't have metal detectors in a prison.
And lastly, the third thing they say is hygiene, that shorter hair prevents lice outbreaks.
No.
Whatever.
I think... And I heard this in Dan's newscast. The court is not saying what they did was okay. They did violate his rights. The court is saying he cannot sue for damages.
Right.
But then what's the point? What's the point? What's the point in the rule that you have religious freedom?
Then there's this from the text line. I'm sure a lot of people have the same feeling. Then maybe he shouldn't have done something illegal to get arrested.
You don't
Once
lose
you go into prison,
all of your rights.
You kind
of
lose your
you
rights.
You guys, you don't check your constitutional rights, all of them at the door. for a five, I'm not that I'm saying we should make this about a mass murder, but for a 5-month drug sentence, not okay. He broke the law. It is not okay to forcibly handcuff someone to a chair and shave their head. I mean, everyone should be outraged by that.
Yeah.
Right? 913-586-7798. Phones are already ringing, and then we will get to our local case that I want to update you on straight ahead on Dana and Parks. We were looking some of this up during the break, and it really is a heartbreaking yet fascinating legal case. And the lower courts that grappled with this before asking the Supreme Court to figure this out all emphatically condemned the treatment of this man, but said they were bound by the law. And the law says, and the way the lawsuit was brought, that he cannot sue individuals for that treatment. The dissenting justices, by the way, said, you're basically greenlighting abhorrent treatment with this decision.
I mean, the text line said it, that why are we okay with treating our prisoners like animals?
I don't think anyone should be okay with watching someone strapped down, handcuffed, with 4 weeks left on his sentence, by the way.
Right.
And forcibly shaved. I mean, my God. It's barbaric. Let's go to Gary in Blue Springs. Hey, Gary.
Hello. How are you all today?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Well, I miss Scott. Scott sometimes takes you into general reality, and I would like to do the same for you and Sam. First of all, when was the last time you ever went to a church and worshipped hair as opposed to the Bible or the biblical teachings? Second...
Wait, let me answer your first question.
You don't get it. Gary, I would like to finish,
no,
please.
No, you're not going to get a finish, because you asked one question, and now I'm going to answer, and then you may answer your next question. You said, when was the last time that hair was sacred? I will tell you, hair holds profound sacred significance in many faiths. I mentioned Sikhism, Native American belief systems, and Rastafarian. Other traditions like Hinduism, Islam, and Orthodox Judaism also practice hair modification or coverings as symbols of devotion, purity, and modesty. Just because that's not your religion, Gary, does not mean it's not sacred to those who practice that religion. You may now continue with question number two.
Question number two is, someone doesn't go to prison unless they've had two or three strikes against them. They've had prison rules for decades. Cleanliness, clothes, you surrender your clothes, you get a haircut. Why does someone who does not contribute to society, let alone do violent crimes or multiple crimes, get any religious protection for something that is arguably against the rules?
Because, Gary, it's called the First Amendment.
Many people don't realize.
I've been a lawyer for many years. Okay.
Clearly
you have not, because you need to go back and read the First Amendment of the Constitution.
I mean, we can go back and forth on why is this protected. The truth is, it is.
It is.
The question is, when you are violating those rights, are there repercussions for doing so? Interesting point from the text line. Could he not hire a civil rights attorney and just sue the entire Louisiana Department of Corrections? I mean, you can't sue the individual guard, but you can sue the institution that puts you in that situation.
They're going to say this is like qualified immunity. I want to be clear. The court ruled again and again his rights were violated. I don't know what kind of practice Gary, he says he's a lawyer. I find that very hard to believe. The court ruled his rights were violated, but because of the way this lawsuit came about, he cannot get damages from the warden and the jailer who did this to him. And real quick, Sam, this is always the problem when we go down the road with any discussion about religion. This is why I can't stand organized religion for so many reasons, and the men who are in charge of it. Is that as long as it's your belief, it makes sense to you. But if it's somebody else's belief, damn them to hell, it makes no sense. And I was talking to Sam about this during a break. name something. If you came down from Mars, think about your religion, whether that's Christianity or Judaism or maybe you're Sikh or Hindu, that if you came down and you knew nothing about this religion would seem a little wonky to you. And we can come up with so many examples, like the tree that we cut down in the forest and stick up in our living room every December, right?
Well, there that has nothing to do with Christmas.
It does not. You are absolutely right. Yet we do it. And so, like, for the hair thing, just because your religion does not find hair to be sacred or something that should be covered, it's not wrong or right that your religion doesn't include those things. But it doesn't mean that somebody else's doesn't include those things.
And with regard to the Bible not mentioning hair, I show you the story of Samson, who lost his strength when they cut his hair.
We will post the entirety of the Supreme Court decision on our social websites. And now we're going to move on to KCK, because this is insanity. We told you guys about the women in KCK who had a spotless record for 50 years. I don't even think this woman had a parking ticket.
Is this one of those ladies that shares the name with a famous person?
Yes, yes. Oh my gosh, there's an update to this story today. KCK woman had spotless record for 50 years.
Until?
She stole $1 million with her best friend. And yes, her name happens to be Julia Roberts.
That's right, Julia Roberts.
All rise. Julia Roberts' loved ones never thought she would be capable of stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars in a years-long wire fraud scheme alongside her very best friend. And for the first few decades on the job, she wasn't, according to court records. Julia Roberts was a productive member of society for the first 50 years of her life, up until she committed and nearly got away with the crime of the century. And there it is, not even an unpaid traffic ticket, Sam. Character witness statements made on her behalf describe her as a grandma, a sweet grandmotherly figure who was always there for those closest to her. As the court can see, the people who have known Julia Roberts for decades consider this crime to be a departure from her true character, according to court documents. They have also witnessed she accept responsibility and her potential for rehabilitation. Blah, 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 blah. Here's the meat of the story that we've got to get to. The scheme would end up netting Julia Roberts and her best friend Vicki Robinson of Bonner Springs nearly $1 million in stolen state court funds. They are to be sentenced during a hearing in about a week. Okay. And trust me, we will cover this. Here's what essentially they are saying these women did. Between January 2018 and February 2023, they stole $979,000 and then deposited significant amounts of money into the Argosy Casino. And I had Sam look this up. I didn't realize Argosy ran sort of like a bank. I know there's a cashier teller's area. How does one deposit $1 million into Argosy Casino?
In a brick and mortar sense, depositing money is very different from buying in. Buying in is when you go to the cashier window and you say, I'd like $10,000 in chips, please. Depositing is going to the cashier window and saying, I've got $500,000 right here, and I'd like you to keep it safe.
Versus putting it in a bank.
And okay. So they go to the vault, they put your money in there, they put your name on it, and you have it for future use.
So this math does not math. And I'm also asking loosely, theoretically, is this how people are laundering money? Like let's say you rob a bank. You can't just take $600,000 in stolen bank money to the bank, right? She had $1 million deposited into Argosy Casino in 2017, $480,000 in 2018. $251,000 in 2019, according to her plea agreement. So they're saying they stole $900,000, Sam, but in 2017 alone, she deposited $1 million into the Argosy Casino.
Now, math ain't mathin'.
Her attorneys are asking, wait for it, for 5 years probation.
Is it her first offense? I mean, you said she was squeaky clean.
She does have some notable health issues, not the court's problem. She has diabetes, cataracts, and a degenerative spine condition.
Could be very expensive for the state.
Okay. Sam, 5 years. They're saying she stole $1 million from the court.
Yeah.
And then she shoved it into the cashier's area at Argosy. I mean, her attorney actually said with a straight face, she will be available to pay restitution. Okay.
Well, she has the money. It's over at Argosy.
I don't know.
At least she didn't spend it, you know? She could have blown it all on gambling.
Do you really believe all of that money is still sitting in a cashier's office over at the Argosy?
I really don't. I don't believe that.
No way.
Yeah.
Julia Roberts. And I'm telling you, we will follow.
Where's the jet ski, Julia?
We will follow what happens in that courtroom next week, because it's usually women. It is usually a slap on the wrist, and they never see a dime of the money back. 913-586-7798. We will wrap things up on Dana and Parks straight ahead. Stick with us. Couple stories to pass along to you as we wrap up the hour. And I'm a little surprised. I love K-Witch. I love the work they do down in Wichita, but I'm a little surprised at the reporting here. Sadly, an Oakley man has died in a crash involving a semi-truck, driven by a 15-year-old.
Oh, the old farm driver's license.
Sam, I don't know. The Kansas Highway Patrol said the man died Saturday night. It was in Logan County. It was a 1989 semi hauling a 2008 Mercury trailer.
Okay.
It collided with a 1996 Chevy Tahoe that the gentleman was driving in, and the driver of the Tahoe died. Tahoe rotated, rolled post-impact. 68-year-old Maynard Unruh of Oakley died at the hospital. The semi driver, a 15-year-old from Oakley, suffered minor injuries, according to the Kansas Highway Patrol. My God, neither driver was wearing a seatbelt. But no one then went back and asked, why is a 15-year-old driving a semi?
It's very common.
Why?
You get your farm permit at 15 years old. You can drive large farm equipment on highways for farming purposes. Down in central Missouri,
we talked about
it a couple years ago. There was a similar story where I think he was 16 or 15. Driving a semi led to a fatal crash.
I mean, I'm just saying, we're starting to take e-bikes away from teenagers, and I don't think that's the worst idea either. We're letting them drive semis? Seriously?
When you need somebody to drive a truck during harvest season, you get who you can to drive the truck.
My favorite dumb criminal story of the day, deputies in Kentucky took two people into custody after finding drugs in a bag labeled, definitely not a bag full of drugs.
Which, by the way, this was like, it wasn't like they took a random bag and a Sharpie and wrote, definitely not a bag full of drugs.
This is not The Onion. This really happened.
No, this was a bag designed to say, definitely not a bag full of drugs.
According to a news release shared by the Laurel County Sheriff's Office, 51-year-old Trisha Crowley and 48-year-old Damon Bennett were sitting in a car parked outside of a business. A detective who responded to the scene spoke with the pair, noticed a plastic bag containing suspected narcotics inside the car. The bag contained contraband, another bag with tablets. She gave them a fake ID. While searching the car, they also found a black bag reportedly labeled, definitely not a bag full of drugs. And inside that bag, labeled, definitely not a bag full of drugs, they found meth and paraphernalia.
A whole lot of drugs.
We are going to leave you with my favorite story of the day. And
also,
just trust me when you go home. Trust me.
Real quick, a fake ID at a bar is one thing. You gave a fake ID to a cop?
With a bag containing drugs labeled. I don't think there were very many good adult decisions being made that day, Sam.
Dumb.
Trust me when you go home. Look up the viral hug, at a Rhode Island private school, capturing an unseen part of student life. And we tell you this with thanks to our teachers, our administrators, our staff members, our janitors, and yes, the lunch lady. One school employee's tearful goodbye has captured the powerful relationships that exists beyond the classroom. The photograph spreads so quickly because it seems to capture something larger than a graduation. Wheeler School senior Philip Spradlin, wearing a black cap and gown, wraps his arms around Dion Lucas, a dining services worker who has spent the past 5 years at the Providence, Rhode Island school greeting students from behind the lunch counter. In the photo, you guys, the 45-year-old Lucas is clutching Philip Spradlin so tightly. Tears fill her eyes. Behind them, other graduates mill about, but the pair seem momentarily unaware of the crowd. For many who saw the image, which was captured by photographer Justin Holland and later shared widely on social, it was Lucas's expression that lingered. Her face is a study in pride, joy, and heartbreak, the complicated emotions that accompany watching kids grow up and move on when you are an employee at a school. It is absolutely a beautiful story. She's there from 7 in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. She said, I hear my name all day. Miss Dion, these are my children. That is your good news story of the day. And we will be back with much more tomorrow on Dana and Parks. A bonus hour is next. Please stick around. We will welcome Kansas City's newest professional softball team to Dana and Parks, the Kansas City Diamonds, straight ahead.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.